Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Breaking Free with psychotherapist Lori Coburn. And tonight we have a special program titled Overcoming Depression Without Medication. We have a special guest tonight, Patrice Save, who is a colleague of mine whom I've known for over 10 years. And Patrice is a certified polarity therapist who has overcome her own anxiety and depression without using medication. She has developed a 30-day program called Being Fully Alive, Living with Depression and Anxiety. And she is here tonight to talk to us about this program and share the tips that have worked for her. You can call in with questions at 917-932-8881. And Patrice, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Lori. Looking forward to talking to you.
Sure. So, Patrice, tell us a little bit about your background and your program.
Okay. Well, again, thanks, Lori, for having me on. And like you said, wow, over 10 years. Yeah, we met in the course of music building, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, let's see. I guess you could say mostly I became aware of like a low-lying depression myself in my early 20s. There was a third heartbreak that I went through with a man that I was involved with and just really sent me into this space where I was overeating and oversleeping and, you know, just escaping, basically. And that's the first time, as I look back on it, that I really realized that I had a problem with depression. You know, I still lived my normal life. I had a very successful career. I was just beginning in the corporate world right out of college and was promoted 3 or 4 times, you know, in the first few years and so on. So it's like out on the surface, everybody, it seemed like I was doing great, you know, but inside, there were issues that I wasn't really dealing with. And, you know, when I'd come home, I would feel more sometimes taken over by this. So anyway, I never really looked into, you know, therapy or anything like that because I had a pretty normal life. I just kind of learned to live with it all. But it always revolved around, like, when I felt hurt or disappointed or afraid or something, you know, I'd want to overeat food and, you know, go to something outside of myself for comfort because, as I can see now, I wasn't really aware of and knowing how to deal with my feelings, which, you know, I'll talk about in a little bit, but that's been a big part of what has happened over the years and a big part of this program. So anyway, I would often be, you know, affected by all this, you know, and my sleeping patterns would be kind of whacked out and that kind of thing too. And I call that all the vicious cycle. It's like having sleeping, you know, arrhythmical sleeping patterns, overeating, just kind of feeling like a vegging out type of feeling, and sometimes just almost feeling paralyzed, like I'm under a curse or something. So that's what I call the vicious cycle in my program. And, you know, everybody, of course, doesn't experience depression the same way. You know, we'll talk about depression and anxiety later and that kind of thing. But I know, you know, different people have had different experiences. So I'm just, you know, mostly speaking from my experience and how it occurred for me. And then, you know, it also, I wanted to just mention that, you know, what I became aware of over time, especially earlier on in the 80s, or what was it? Yeah, early in the 80s, when I started looking at Bradshaw, John Bradshaw's work about, you know, shame and dysfunctional families and all that kind of stuff, I always felt defective. I felt like there was something wrong with me. And so that was just an underlying thing. But, you know, again, I just learned to live with it all, and I thought, oh, well, you know, I guess this is just sort of part of being human. Anyway, then over the years, I just, you know, I looked at all different kinds of things about, you know, kind of like self-improvement and psycho-spiritual stuff. And, you know, little by little, I became more and more aware that, you know, maybe this is like some sort of depression. So I started looking around, you know, at different things online and, you know, looking to see. And I never found anything that described my condition. Like the clinical definitions and such didn't seem to really apply to me. And, you know, I just continue to do things. Like, I started meditating, and I really got into a more healthy eating lifestyle. I was into, quote, you know, a spiritual awareness process. That was the first time in my life. That was probably, I don't know, about 5 years after this initial awareness that something was, you know, about me was depressing. About 5 years after that, I started, you know, getting into, you know, more of a spiritual awareness and going that route. And so I got into a whole natural healing path, and, you know, really completely never got into a traditional medicine route. In fact, my boyfriend at the time that I was involved with for several years was a doctor of natural medicine. And so, you know, he knew that there was issues and stuff that I, you know, went through and stuff. And we always talked about various healing methods. Inner child work was a big one for me down at that time, and then meditation and healthy eating. And those helped a lot. But there was still an underlying shame that I never was able to really tap into. And one of the things about my history is that because I started out in that sort of spiritual thing so early on, I wanted to really look good. I was really driven by looking good. So I kept a lot of my depression-type stuff and my overeating secret. I kept it hidden. And that is one of the characteristics of depression in my experience, is that you hide and isolate. And I felt a lot of shame around that. Like, even, you know, even though I lived with Carl, I didn't, you know, want him to know. So I would hide some of my, you know, patterns from him. So anyway, that's kind of, you know, the initial background, and I don't want to talk too much nonstop just to have an interaction with you. So that's, you know, that's kind of where everything all started.
That's a good synopsis. It seems to me like a lot of people in our society experience some level of depression or anxiety. Actually, it seems to me like some low-level depression and anxiety is the norm. And would you say that that's your experience from watching people?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll tell you, Lori, well, you and I know this because we talk, but, you know, since I've come out of the closet, which is what I call it, I, you know, for years, I mean, for several years, even like when I first knew you, I still couldn't talk about this, you know, because I felt that people would judge me, and I felt I wanted to have this facade of, you know, how I wanted to appear, and I wanted to appear successful. I wanted to appear spiritually aware and, you know, awake and all that kind of stuff. I just didn't want to talk about it. So I really have understanding and compassion for people who don't feel like this is something that's normal and that they can talk about. You know, it's a very, you know, hush-hush type of subject matter, and it's still in some of the circles that I keep. I can't tell people about this, you know, because it's just not socially acceptable. And it actually is one of my goals and my vision, is that this can actually become demystified, and that we can get rid of this social stigma about, oh, you know, she has depression, there's something wrong with her, you know, she this or that. It's like, no, we need to have normal everyday household conversations about this and come out of the closet, because actually being able to talk about it and have it be normal and have it be, you know, something that you don't have to hide is a huge part of the healing.
Yes, I agree with you. That's like the 12-step programs that say don't hold any secrets. You're as sick mm-hmm. as your secrets. Well, the way you said it is that you didn't go to therapy and you looked up clinical indicators online and didn't feel like you fit any of the clinical
right.
descriptions. But I can tell you from what you've described to me, with the clinics that I have worked in as a psychotherapist, had you walked through the door, you would have been given medication, even if you didn't fit all the diagnostic criteria for
mm-hmm.
depression. And that's something that we should talk about here at the beginning of the show, that this program you're recommending is basically for people who have everyday normal moods as opposed to extremely severe clinical depression.
Right.
People should seek professional help, and we want to do the medical disclaimer here that this is not a substitute for medical advice. So anyone here on the line listening or listening on the archives, if you are suicidal or you have extremely serious symptoms, seek professional help. And if you're suicidal, seek help immediately. But given that, the fact that what we talked about, that your depression sounds almost normal, and there's a bell curve that I've seen in my professional mental health practice, which is that there are, on one end of the bell curve, there's a real serious depression. Mm-hmm. Then there's the top of the bell, which are people who may not have a whole lot of it. And then there's the other side of people who have a little bit of depression. And the people on the serious end, they can't move. They can't even function without antidepressants. They're crying all the time, or they cannot even move themselves out of the house. I've seen the people at the top of the curve, and I know that there's some friends of mine who are on medication that I don't really think they need to be, and they just plateau out. It's almost like the medication just helps them for a little bit, and then they're just back to the same old patterns. It's like they're not even on medication. They still go through their moods, and they still go through their anxiety. And then there's another part of the curve where there are people who are actually harmed by medication, that their symptoms actually get worse. So that's why I'm glad you're offering this program for people who do not have the serious, serious depression to have alternatives to medication. So can you tell us a little more about your program?
Yeah. We'll kind of go back and forth here, I'm sure. Just listening to what you just said, though, I want to say something before I talk about my program in particular. And that is that, and you know this about me, but I felt really guided internally, you know, by intuition, or, you know, I call it my divine partner. I have this very strong relationship with a sort of a being or a guide in my life. And actually, there's more than one sometimes, but one in particular. And I feel like this whole issue of medication, you know, I was guided to be on the natural healing path in my 20s. I'm quite a lot older than that at this time. But this was very early on in my late 20s when all this started to come up to the surface and when I started natural healing. And now I can see, looking back, that I was guided to go the natural healing route instead of the medication route. And I also feel, you know, like some people may agree or not, and that's fine. But for me, it became clear that I had a soul's purpose. I came into this lifetime to experience this kind of mental health issue at the level that it was. It didn't have to be severe, so that I could be a spokesperson, so that I could actually heal it within myself, or at least, you know, be in the process of healing it. Because, by the way, it's not over. It's not gone. I wouldn't even say I've overcome it, but I would say that I've learned to live with it more successfully. But this is part of my path, you know, to be able to do that myself and then to help others to do the same. So I, you know, kind of went off on a tangent there for a minute, but I wanted to respond to your medication issue, and that is, you know, some people might really be drawn to medication and they might really feel that their doctor relationship is important to them and their doctor said this or that. And so that is to be respected, but that is not what I did. That was not the path for me. And I even don't really go to doctors to this day, just for annual checkups. But I don't give a lot of credence to the traditional medical system. And I felt like it was my mission to have an alternative path for this. And so, again, over the years, you know, going through everything I did got me to this point. So anyway, now to your question about the program. So, you know, I mentioned a few things about my background and everything. And, you know, through the years, I was, you know, continuing to explore different paths, mostly for my own healing. At the time, back in my 20s and 30s, I really didn't know that I was going to have this mission of being, you know, a consultant for people with depression and overcoming anxiety and all that kind of stuff. It didn't come to me until my 40s. But anyway, let's see, I just lost my train of thought for a second. Okay, so yeah, the program didn't develop until my 40s, really. But I had so much background, I just didn't realize what that background was preparing me for. And I think it was when, actually probably around the time when I met you or somewhere in the vicinity, when I was in the Course in Miracles And I was pretty heavy into it for a while. And in fact, A Course in Miracles is one of the foundational studies that has been a huge influence for me. I've been a student of it. Well, I'm not currently practicing it except for some key items that I've taken with me. But I was very involved for about 15 years. And one of the greatest gifts of that course for me were two things. One was learning about what ego is. And actually, you know, learning that ego doesn't even exist, but we just believe it's just a belief. And then secondly was the quote, true forgiveness idea. And so those issues or those, you know, pieces or jewels, I guess, if you will, are a part of the program. Part of the program right from the start is introducing people to this idea of ego. And, you know, understanding that a lot of the things that we think about, especially, you know, the negative types of things, are just stories. They're not even real. They're just something that we've grown to believe is true, but it's not. And that sometimes can be very hard to grasp. And also, there's often a lot of resistance. Well, what do you mean? I feel hopeless. How can you say that's not real? And God knows, I have been down that road hundreds or maybe thousands of times. Like, don't tell me this isn't real. It sure as heck feels real. You know, and so, yes, I totally understand that. And yet at the same time, part of what this program aims to do is to really have us see what are our thinking patterns. You know, what are the common thoughts that we have? And are they really true? It's challenging, though, the truth of those. It's very heavily influenced by some of my several years in working with, like, mindfulness and, like, people, popular names, Eckhart Tolle, Ajahshanti, Nirmala, who's not as well-known of a name but has been a great teacher and influence in my life. And, you know, Stephen Levine. I can't forget Stephen Levine. Very early on in the 80s, when I was still in my 20s, I started reading his stuff, and it was just, that was really my first introduction to, not mindfulness, because I wouldn't say Stephen is writing about mindfulness, but his work is very much about awareness, you know, being aware of what arises, and all of these teachers and all of what I've gained from their teachings has been about noticing what arises and allowing it, having loving kindness and mercy for it, instead of feeling upset about it and wanting to get rid of it instead of identifying with it as me, you know, all of that kind of thing. So those are all, you know, those background parts of my life are all hugely influential in the program. And the last thing I'll say before I take a break and, you know, go back to you, another key thing which I kind of mentioned but I want to emphasize is, and this runs throughout all of the teachings that I've studied, is that there is a higher awareness or a higher self or, you know, a higher power. There's so many different names out there, but it's a power that's greater than ourselves that is not just this human ego personality. It's like really our true identity, what and who we really are. And, you know, I don't always live in that by any stretch of the imagination. My ego part, my human part is with me every day. And that's okay. I'm learning to, you know, see the balance. And that's part of the program, too, is, you know, can we have a sense of the whole self as, you know, can we allow and accept that whole aspect of our being, you know, both the spiritual beingness of us and the physical human being of us, and find a way for all of that to work together so that we don't get so, you know, torn in one direction or another. So anyway, that's all, you know, the initial parts of the program that I wanted to mention. And I turn it back over to you, Lori.
Okay, so your blog is called Love Whole Self.
Yeah.
And your website is lovewholeself.com, whole, W-H-O-L-E.
Yeah.
So, yes, when you're talking about all these components, the higher self part of us, the ego part of us that has mm-hmm. all these critical negative thoughts, and then the aspect of just observing or witnessing or watching non-judgmentally how the ego operates,
yes.
But then calling in the help of our Holy Spirit, higher self, divine partner, whatever you want to call it, God, calling in that higher power to help us detach or overcome these negative thought patterns.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's the essence of your program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you know, like for somebody who can't really believe that there's a power greater than themselves, or, you know, feels like that's just not resonating with them, this program wouldn't be appropriate for them, because it really does hinge on that. And, you know, sometimes, honestly, sometimes a person may not have a sense of that higher power or that greater beingness, that spiritual being of their human personality self, and that's okay. But they have to at least be open to that if this program is going to have an impact for them, because it will start to, if they are open to it, it will start to become present in their life with day-to-day practice. And that's, by the way, a little bit of a tangent, but why I designed this as a 30-day program. As you know, I've been writing a book for a long time, and I was, very seriously thinking about having this be a book, you know, in a traditional way. But then I had this idea. It just came to me this year. I was running on the beach. I live in Sarasota, and thankfully, it's a beautiful place to be. And I'm running along the beach, which is a lot of times where inspiration and, you know, my divine partner speaks to me. And, you know, the feeling just came in, like, you know what, you've been preparing for years, and you've been thinking about writing this depression book for like 10 years, and you've been talking about it. Just do it. And, you know, I don't know how I can really explain it, but it really hit me this time. And I guess the timing was just right, because I went home. I literally went home from my run, and I started writing day one. And then what was miraculous was each day for the next 30 days, I'm not lying, every day I wrote one day. Okay, here's day two. Here's day three. And I went back to a lot of my old material and stuff, but I also called on my higher guidance and asked, you know, okay, what needs to be in day three? You know, what needs to be in day four? To the best of my ability, I just felt like I wanted to be guided. And for 30 straight days, I wrote the program one day at a time. It was beautiful.
So it sounds like it was inspired.
I feel like it really was, Lori. And, you know, like I said, you know, a long time ago, maybe 10 years ago, I felt like this was part of my soul's purpose, you know, to go through this myself and then to share, you know, the healing and the process so that I could help others get through the same thing.
Can you give us an example of what some of the days, exercises, or challenges are like? Like, what is day one? What is day five? What are some examples?
Yeah, well, let's see. I'm going to get out some of my days. But just for starters, okay, one of the common threads that runs through the whole program is a mindfulness meditation, a basic mindfulness meditation. And also what's included in the program is a guided process that I've taped, and it's on an MP3 recording that, you know, is provided through the internet for people who are in the program. And it's just a basic meditation that takes you through, you know, being aware of your breathing, just some of the fundamentals. I should probably, though, define first mindfulness, because sometimes that's helpful if people don't really know what that is. And I have a definition that I picked from John Kabat-Zinn, which I thought was really a good definition and just a basic. I'm trying to find that. Oh, here we go. Yeah. Yeah, it's from his book called Coming to Our Senses. It's John Kabat-Zinn, Kabat-Zinn. On page 107, he says, mindfulness can be thought of as moment-to-moment, non-judgmental awareness, cultivated by paying attention in a specific way that is in the present moment, and as non-reactively, as non-judgmentally, and as open-heartedly as possible. So that is the premise, and that's included in my program, that quote. And so the premise of the mindfulness is to just do that very thing, you know, to just sit with yourself in a breathing awareness, which is often part of mindfulness because it keeps you focused. You keep coming back to the breath. You watch how your mind wanders. You watch the stories that your mind has, and you become more and more familiar with those. It's scary sometimes, and it's very easy to judge and say, oh, my God, you know, I don't want anybody to know that this is what's going on in my mind right now. And I did that for years. Oh, my gosh. So many times did I feel ashamed and, you know, judgmental about my thoughts and stories. That's all a part of the process. But eventually, oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, what about people who can't do that, who can't sit back and watch their thoughts? For example, I have a really hard time with that, which mm-hmm. is why A Course in Miracles, with its active affirmations, worked better for me than watching my thoughts. Eventually, as I did A Course in Miracles, my mind quieted down, so now I can watch my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But people starting out may not be able to even calm down or quiet down enough to watch. And so how do you work with people on that?
Well, you know, it is a process, and it may not be right for the beginning. You know, somebody might have to go through something else first. You know, like you say, you know, the Course in Miracles was really important for you with the affirmations and something to really focus on that you could kind of wrap your mind around. I think maybe that's what you're saying.
Yes, it helped to just substitute
yeah.
the thoughts because they were never quiet enough to watch them. But if I could take it and then actively change it to another thought,
mm-hmm.
that worked better for me, which it sounds like that's kind of like the higher self part of your program.
Right,
calling on
yeah.
that higher mind or that higher level of thinking to substitute.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And, it, you know, it can be very challenging at first. And a lot of people who, you know, including myself, who start out with mindfulness, you have to just kind of go, well, okay, I'm not doing this the way I think I should be doing it, but I'm doing the best I can. Like, there's no should about it. It's kind of like, I just sit down and practice. You know, some days my mind might be totally wandering, especially in the earlier days. And, you know, and I had to learn, or I didn't have to, I'll say, but it was helpful for me to come to learn that that's okay. That's normal. It's part of what it is. You know, there's a very impatient part of us that does not want to be disciplined. And getting back to the ego self, the ego does not want to be seen. You know, it wants our mind to keep wandering. In fact, there's, you know, some really good material in A Course in Miracles about the wandering mind and how we need to, you know, just really kind of rein that in. But it takes a lot sometimes to do that, and there is tremendous resistance. So what I've learned and I, you know, coach people about is just be with that resistance. You know, can you just allow that then and just notice it? You know, notice the fight. There's a piece of, let's see, I'm trying to find that. There's a piece in A Course in Miracles that, you know, talks really frankly about the ego, and it says it's the ego's job to seek but never find. And, you know, I find that that is a very good way of just explaining why sometimes we don't want to be disciplined and we don't really want to watch our thoughts. You know, we're all over the place, and we can't, you know, just be the observer, because the ego doesn't want to be seen. It doesn't want to kind of, you know, get caught or get called as to what it is. And when we're disidentifying, when we're watching and observing, we've brought in another part of ourself, that higher self, that awareness. So now, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to get too complicated here, but it's kind of like we've got two parts of ourself with us. You know, we've got the part that's really getting stuck in thoughts and can't discipline itself and doesn't want to do it and says, you know, I don't even believe in this. I don't want to keep doing this. I'm just going to drop it. And, but there's another part, if we can, you know, be open to it, that starts to come in little by little and says, oh, that's interesting. You know, that's just something that I'm thinking. So it's aware of what we're thinking. And as soon as there's that other presence that's aware of what we're thinking, you know, then we're onto something. We're onto a possibility for freedom and liberation that is just, you know, incredible. And I don't even think I've reached, you know, 50% of that yet at this point. It just gets better and better. The more I disidentify, the more I have that sense of awareness that's just watching. So it, you know, I guess getting back to your, you know, question, it may not be for everybody, and so that I want to always respect. On the other hand, you know, if somebody is open to it and, you know, there's books that they can read, I don't want to be the one to write books about mindfulness or, you know, about awareness. There's so many wonderful pieces of material out there that I can refer people to, things like that, that helped me, you know, to be able to just really deal with what you're talking about, you know, that mind that doesn't want to do this, that doesn't want to watch, that, you know, doesn't want to be seen, or that doesn't want to have the discipline to just sit there.
But from what you just said, it sounds like people who do have trouble meditating actually could do this program, because your approach is, don't judge yourself for that.
Right.
Just notice that your mind wants to jump all over the place and do the best you can, and
exactly.
Forgive yourself, accept yourself where you're at. And just, it sounds like through your program that just even a fraction of a change in terms of being able to observe or watch your patterns will bring about shifts in your life.
Absolutely, Lori. It will, just little by little. I mean, you know, sometimes there's major shifts that some of us experience, but most of the time, in my experience too, it's just little baby steps, little things on a progressive basis. And, you know, that leads me to something else that I wanted to say.
Before you go into that, hold that thought, okay?
Yep,
because I just want to announce again, we are on Blog Talk Radio, the Poetic Energy Network, Breaking Free with psychotherapist Lori Coburn, and our special guest is Patrice Save, who is a certified polarity therapist, and she's a coach for helping people with mild anxiety and depression, helping them overcome that without medication. Her website is lovewholeself.com, lovewhole self.com. And if you have any questions and you'd like to call in and ask Patrice, the phone number is 917-932-8881. Okay, Patrice, go ahead with that thought.
Yeah, you know what, Lori, darn it, I forgot what I was going to say. Something I was saying about little baby steps and, okay. It's that, you know, we are addicted in our society, as far as I'm concerned, in so many ways, including myself, by the way. I've come to terms with the fact that I'm an addict, and that hasn't been easy. But anyway, we're addicted to quick fixes, and that's exactly what steers us away from, you know, something like what we were just talking about with mindfulness. You know, we want something that's just going to take away the pain, or we want something that's just going to get us back on track, and we want it to happen overnight. But these little baby steps of progress, I find, and this is my experience, not everybody, you know, there are some people who just maybe woke up and had enlightenment overnight, but most of us don't have that. Most of us have to, you know, progressively, year after year, day after day, open up to our awakening. And when I say awakening, basically I just mean awakening to that whole self, you know, that higher self aspect, that awareness of who and what we really are, that merges and integrates into our human personality side. So, you know, the idea of the quick fix is the exact opposite. This type of program is not a quick fix. You know, this is something that is going to give progress on a daily basis, and then each of those little daily baby steps build on each other, and the momentum builds. You know, and I don't claim that somebody's going to overcome depression in 30 days, but I definitely claim, and I would guarantee and give people money back, that if they apply the program each day, they will see progress, you know. And then, actually, you know, once 30 days is up, it's very strongly recommended that you don't just stop, but that you keep going.
Do the program over again.
Well, do the program over again, or keep doing, you know, maybe your own individualized. See, one of the things that will happen in the program, as far as the way I've designed it, is because you asked, and I'm going back to your question that you asked about 10 minutes ago, is what are some of the examples of the exercises? And I gave you one example, which was mindfulness. Well, another example of an exercise in the program is, you know, developing that relationship with what I call, you know, the divine partner. That's my term, but it's often called the higher self or whatever. You can call it your intuition, call it your guidance with your God, you know, whatever God you endure. or, you know, that's not the right word. I can't think of the right word, but esteem or, you know, whatever God makes sense to you. Well, if you do that on a daily basis and you're asking for help and you're vulnerable and you're surrendering and you're saying, I can't do this by myself. I need you. You know, I want a partnership with you. That's another example of a daily meditation that I strongly recommend in the program, to just keep coming back to that. And if that's practiced, what's really beautiful that has happened with me, and I love, you know, to see this happen with other people, is then their own higher guidance starts to take over. So they may, you know, have their own personalized, individualized program that they continue on with after 30 days or something like that. It's really important to me as a facilitator that people find their own way and their own truth and their own guidance to take over, because that's been the greatest gift for me. You know, although I have a lot of people that I, you know, have learned a lot from and I totally respect and honor as teachers on my path, the most important teacher is our inner teacher. And that is what I hope that people can get in touch with and get a sense of through this program, so that that inner teacher can take them into their own customized way of, you know, understanding and learning about all this stuff.
That's so true. That's what I always used to tell my clients in therapy, that their own inner wisdom, their own inner voice, or the Holy Spirit or God was their best therapist.
Absolutely. Now, you know, people like you and I can help coach people and facilitate that, but, you know, it's just so valuable when people are empowered to go, oh, you mean I have this wisdom too? I can have a divine partner that, you know, I can talk to, like a best friend that I can always turn to? Absolutely.
How would you define your program as being different from other sources of treating depression?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, first of all, I've kind of already said this, but I'll just expand on it a little. This program is different in the sense that it's kind of like a home-cooked meal. You know, grassroots isn't exactly the word, but that's kind of an expression that comes to mind, too. It's something that was just created out of my own life experience. So there's no scientific, you know, studies. There's no research quoted. You know, there's not any of that kind of background, which I found in just a little bit of research that I've done on the topic, that a lot of books have a lot of clinical terminology and a lot of, you know, research and background that's very more traditional, mainstream, medical kind of stuff. And so I don't include any of that in my program. Not that I don't encourage that. I think everybody should explore whatever they're drawn to, and I have also. It's just not part of my program, and people can go to other sources, other books for that kind of information. Another thing that makes it unique or different, I guess you could say, is that it's a self-study. I think that's really important. I personally have never come across a program like this. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't any out there, but what I could have used the most, and it was never available to me, I never found it, was somebody who could hold my hand on a daily basis, day by day, and walk me through and really have a feeling that person really gets me. They really get what it is that I'm talking about, what I'm feeling, what I'm struggling with. I don't know why, I never found that type of guide, you know, when I was going through this. And
that's
part of
interesting.
It, yeah, part
yeah,
of
and,
it may
and you
be
do coaching too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And part of what is
part of it may, you know, the reason I may never have found it, I don't know, you know, is because I wasn't, you know, really looking hard enough, or maybe partly I know this is true. You know, sometimes for many years I was not ready and willing to give it up, Lori. I still was very attached to my stories, and, you know, depression has payoffs. You know, when you have a low-lying depression, you know, like, for example, one of the payoffs for me that I had to identify, which was really painful to admit and embarrassing, was that, you know, I could be lazy. That was a payoff for me. If I didn't feel like doing anything, I could just say, oh, well, I feel depressed. You know, I'm really caught up in this curse, and I feel helpless, and, you know, poor me. It was a payoff.
You got to be a victim.
Yeah, exactly. And that's very embarrassing to admit that I wanted to be a victim, but there was, that's a part of my little ego act and story that it wants to feel like a victim. Now, I've had to do a lot of healing around that, and I still do, because sometimes it still comes up.
Can you say some more about the ego stories that contribute to depression?
Yeah, well, one of the biggest stories in my experience, and I know that this is true because I, for example, did landmark education for a while, and it was one of the most common, quote, stories that people came up with, and that was, there must be something wrong with me. I'm a loser. I'm not good enough. Those are some common storylines. And hopefully, you know, just by saying the statement, people can relate. It's like, do those kinds of thoughts go round in your head where when you feel bad about yourself, you're saying to yourself, God, I'm a loser. You know, I'm so ashamed of myself. There must be really something wrong with me. You know, nobody else has these kind of thoughts, or nobody else is as bad as me. I'm really, you know, defective, or whatever, stuff like that. If you're going around in those kind of common thoughts, that would be what I would call depression. Now, you may still be functioning normal life, you know, you may have a job, a family, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, when you're kind of at home alone maybe, or, you know, when you're driving in the car or you're at work and you're kind of distracted, you might be having those kind of stories. That, to me, is a form of depression.
Okay. And A Course in Miracles, I love how it talks about those stories, the way it says each ego wants to be special. And even in our loser identity, I'm so different than other people, and I'm so special because I'm such a loser. It's so ridiculous.
Right.
But you do have to expose those. If you don't know they're there and you don't know you're running those programs, you can't heal them. And it sounds like the beauty of your 30-day program is not only do you offer solutions, but you offer a big thing about really uncovering all the patterns that are running.
It's a big piece. You got to uncover the patterns, and that, you know, what you just said about the ego and the course, absolutely. You know, exposing the secrets. I mean, one of the, to me, and I think to you too, and a lot of us who have done A Course in Miracles, one of the biggest lessons in it is, you know, that we bring our secrets to what A Course calls Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit is basically just our higher self, in my opinion.
Yes.
And so we're just saying, yes, I'm willing to admit that I have this story of I'm a loser, I'm not good enough, something must be wrong with me. But, you know, as you know, it takes a long time sometimes to really be willing to admit that and to be open to saying to Holy Spirit or higher power or, you know, whatever you call your God-type self, to say, I'm willing and ready to let this go. Because oftentimes we are not willing and ready to let it go. But as soon as we are, that's when a miracle is right on the cusp. You know, it can be a holy instant, as the, you know, Course in Miracles says, because we're willing to have it be open and exposed, and then invite and welcome in Holy Spirit, and share the perception that Holy Spirit has with us. And, it's out of our hands. That's another thing that's important. And I kind of said this before, but I want to emphasize that, you know, we don't do the healing. It's at that higher self level that the healing, we turn it over to that higher power, and it does what we cannot do, you know, which is, as you know, a huge premise of A Course in Miracles, too.
Right. I just want to mention again, if you're listening in, we have about 15 minutes left, and the call-in number is 917-932-8881. And Patrice, could you tell the audience what are some of the benefits you've attained from your practice?
Yeah, I will. Let me just quickly finish one of your other questions, though, in terms of what makes this program different. I just wanted to emphasize that, you know, I mentioned it's a daily self-study, so that's a big piece. Also, it's very simple, not easy, but it's very simple with daily encouragement. It's, you know, it's not real complicated. It doesn't get into all kinds of stuff that you have to do. It also has a lot of emphasis on being in touch with your feelings. that, and you know me, you know, and what I've gone through, that's been a big part of healing with depression. And I include that in the program because I think it's essential that we get in touch with what our hurts are, our disappointments, the things that, you know, we've hung on to for years. Because as most of us, you know, including myself, when I would have hurts or disappointments, I didn't know how to really, number one, even identify my feelings, and number two, I didn't know how to be with my feelings. And it was not common practice back in the 80s, you know, to talk about your feelings with people. You know, nowadays, more so, it's more common to go to a therapist or whatever. But, you know, there's still a little bit of a poo-poo, hush-hush thing about talking about your real dark feelings. And
yeah.
Or talking about feelings that are hurtful. And, you know, we only can do that with certain people where we feel safe. Well, if we don't feel safe, which oftentimes we don't, and we don't have people in our life who we can talk to about feelings, then we suppress that. And that is one of the, not the causes of depression, but it's one of the antagonizers of a depressive personality, that you can't talk about what you feel. And then you just keep getting, you know, that's why I call this program Being Fully Alive. What I've learned is I cannot be fully alive if I'm suppressing feelings and I'm not being able to deal with them and experience them and release them. So anyway, I just wanted to add that in terms of, you know, one of the other unique aspects of this program. Now, getting to the question of, you know, what kinds of things have I seen or results, basically, is what you were asking, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Again, as I've said, you know, this has been over a period of years. So, you know, it's not something that happens quickly. But one of the things that I've definitely seen as a huge improvement is that I have more compassion and loving kindness for myself. I have definitely struggled with perfection issues. You know, if I didn't have this, that, and the other thing in perfect order, then, you know, I was a loser. I've had that exaggerated sort of story that things have to be perfect before I can really rest and be at peace or love myself or whatever. And I had to really take a look at that and find that was just like really being way too hard on myself. So as I've done that over time, and especially in the last few years, there's much more of a sense of loving acceptance of myself with all my imperfections, with all my defeats, with all my, you know, foibles and incongruencies. And can I just allow those all to be a part of me without wanting to try to get rid of them or judging myself for it? So that's been a huge sign of progress. Also, I mentioned before, you know, taking little baby steps instead of, you know, being expecting a perfection or expecting quick fixes. That's been a really big step of improvement. And not being in my head so much, you know, not keeping things to myself. That's one of the dangers of a depressive type of personality is, you know, I've talked about it already, that you want to keep things secret because you feel ashamed. You know, you don't want people to know that you think you're a loser and that you're not good enough and stuff like that. So you go round and round in your head, and, you know, that's part of the characteristic of depression is that you're ruminating. You have ruminating-type thoughts, and you feel very alone and isolated. So keeping things to yourself can be very, you know, it feeds the process. And ego that we talked about a few times tonight, wants us to stay separate and stay isolated. You know, it's just kind of, I mean, I'm kind of joking because it's not really real, but it's kind of like as if there's this little, you know, devil on one of your shoulders that's saying, oh, great, I got her now. She's really believing this, and, you know, she's going to think that she's a loser, and she's not going to call up her friends. She's just going to stay isolated in the house and, you know, not really reach out. You know, I got her good now. Now, you know, we can go overeat or we can go, you know, get our sleeping all whacked out, you know, it's kind of like that. And so one of the things that has really been a sign of progress for me is to see how if I take more action and I'm more fully expressed and I can come out of the closet and talk to people about what it is that I'm going through, that's been huge for me. You know, and like just, I don't know, that's only been in probably the last 5 or 6 years where I really started to tell people about what I was going through. And I was so embarrassed, and it was so hard to finally talk to somebody about it. But now it's kind of like I'm wearing my, you know, what's that expression, I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve or something like that, where it's kind of like, hey, this is just a part of me. And, you know, there's hardly any embarrassment or shame about it anymore. And it's just something I've come to accept. And I also have found that the more that I express it with people, the more I find, you know, people actually are more attracted to me, kind of. You know, they're kind of like, oh, you know, tell me more about that. Or they feel like I'm really being real, and that's, you know, that's more attractive. And also the people who also can relate to me, they're kind of like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. You know, I do this, that, and the other thing. And then we can laugh about it, and we can join together instead of stay separate.
And I think letting go of shame and loving ourselves is the core of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you had said, too, was in the, I think you may have said this to me privately, that your periods of depression used to be more frequent and longer, and when they happen now, they're much more short, they're much shorter, much more, less intense, and you just get out of them faster.
Right. Yeah, in fact, you're right. We did talk about that, and that, like, for example, I now have, I would say in the last year, I've maybe had two or three episodes of depression for, like, 3 or 4 days at the longest, maybe only one or two most of the time, whereas it used to be 10 or 12 times a year, you know, sometimes lasts for 5 to 7 days or something like that. So, yes, there's been a significant decrease in the occurrences per year, if you will, and in, you know, in the occupation of being consumed with it for days on end. You know, there's times when I may be going through about, like the last one that I can remember, I might have experienced it for 3 or 4 hours in the day, but then, you know, I kind of would snap out of it, and it wouldn't consume me for the whole day. But it might be back again the next day for a little bit. But, you know, it wasn't that consuming day after day, 24/7 type of feeling.
Mm-hmm. So that is really important here. Now, I remember one time when we were talking, and I suggested to you, why don't you get a sun lamp for the seasonal affective disorder in the winter time? And you ended up moving to Florida to help solve that problem. But you had commented, I know what you're saying, and I know that's a natural approach, but I really feel like I'm supposed to find the light within me, not from some external source. So could you say a little bit about that?
Sure. As part of my background, so many years ago, back in the 90s, I started getting exposed to, you know, like light workers and healing with love and light and that kind of thing. And then I was drawn to go to get certified to be a polarity therapist, because I had been seeing a polarity therapist back in the early 90s and really was impressed with the work that she was doing with me. And it was, you know, partly about, like, understanding our body is not just a physical body, but it's also an energetic body. We are an energetic beings, or one of the phrases I just love is we're spiritual beings having a human experience. So as I got to learn more about that, we're spiritual beings. That's our true identity. We just happen to be in a human form, in a human body, but we are not the body. We are not this human. We are something much greater than that. So when I got into all that, I got attracted to learning and went to school for, I guess it took me 4 years to finish a 700-hour program in polarity therapy to learn the energetic anatomy, the energetic body. And a big part of that is learning that part of us that is the, you know, spiritual being or the energetic being, which is basically, you know, kind of a light, an energy of light. And so we learn different techniques of, you know, how to heal with light and with energy so that we can actually unblock the things that may be causing our physical manifestations that are actually in our energetic anatomy that are blocked. And, you know, the power of healing with light and love is really just essentially the power of healing with Holy Spirit or the higher self or whatever you want to call it. So that was what I was referring to. And I do regular, sometimes daily, you know, visualizations and different processes that I've recorded and created over time, which, by the way, I'm going to begin to sell my visualizations on my website, and some of them come free with the program. But anyway, you know, some of them deal with bringing that healing energy of this love and light aspect into our energetic being and clearing things. And so that's the light that I was referring to, you know, when we talked that time.
And that makes so much sense, because if everything in truth is just light and love and all form is an illusion, then that is the only true healing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you know that, like I do. The only true healing comes, yeah, the only true healing really comes from that higher level of, you know, the spiritual being.
That's why I think that people who are seeking a quick fix through a pill and aren't doing their spiritual work, that's why the pills will work for maybe 2 months or 3 months. Like, oh, I've got this new savior, this new thing that's going to help me. And then when that honeymoon period wears off, they're just right back to their same old self, because they haven't changed their thoughts, they haven't changed their mind, they're not working on their inner being, they're not transcending their small ego self to activate their higher self and all that. So that's why for a lot of people who do not have serious depression, the pills simply don't do anything.
Yeah, it's hard for me to know, because you have more background with that. I never went the medication route, and I'm not familiar with it. But I'm not a proponent of the medication route. But, you know, it may be right for some people, and I don't want to disrespect that for some that it does seem to be necessary for. But somebody, for example, who is on medication and, you know, really feels like that's important, they could even benefit from this program if they supplemented. You know, they wouldn't necessarily stop any of the things
right.
that they're already doing. But this kind of a program could start to, if they're open, you know, the key is they have to be open to these, you know, these ideas and approaches. And many more people, as you know, there's a whole shift taking place on the planet and in humanity and in our consciousness. More and more people are opening up to healing on a natural level in the ways that we've been talking about. So, you know, people on medication could say, you know, well, I'm going to keep my regimen with my, you know, therapist or my psychiatrist and the medication and everything, but I'm also going to explore a more natural method like this, you know, Love Whole Self program or Being Fully Alive program, and, you know, just see if that starts to make a difference. Because what I hope to get to in this program is this gets more at the root and the causes rather than just covering up symptoms, which
right.
I'm afraid a lot of times medication just covers up symptoms, but it doesn't really get to the core of a healing process,
and
which
yes,
I want
I would
to provide.
Totally agree with that.
Yeah.
And that's where studies have shown that depression is best helped with a combination of medication and therapy. So
mm-hmm.
Combination. This is a form of therapy that people could use in combination with their meds. We only have 2 minutes left, so what I'd like you to do is give us your contact information and how people can get this program.
Sure. Well, you've already mentioned my website is Love Whole Self. It's www.lovewholeself.com, and that's Love Whole, W-H-O-L-E, self.com. So, you know, my phone number is on there, but I will give that in case anyone wants to call. It's 734-262-9395. And, you know, the website has my email and such. So, you know, people can look at the website and check out what I'm offering. There is a little bit of a piece on the website about the program. Also, you know, what's unique about this program, I think, is that it's all, well, I have been offering it for free as an introduction, but I'm now starting to charge, and it's just a minor energy exchange of $25 to $50. You know, it's kind of like based on a sliding scale and people's economic ability to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So they can find all that information on the website, and, you know, I welcome
okay.
calls.
Yeah, and I'd like to mention, we just got a caller calling in, but we don't have time to take the call. So to the caller who's on hold, if you go to Patrice's website, they can get your phone number, right?
Right. I just gave the phone number, but yes, my website, www.lovewholeself.com, and my
phone number.
Do you
want to give your phone number again?
Yep.
Yes, okay.
It's 734-262-9395.
Okay, 734-262-9395. Patrice, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Lori. Take care.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye.